I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today. Yeah.
Come in!
ladies and gentlemen, it's the Football Ramble. Lovely to have you back, the listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm joined by Pete.
This is...
Pete Donaldson.
A little bit over the top, Pete. You know,
in case there was any doubt at all. Pete, you're not very well today.
I'm not very well. I'm going to kind of take a little bit of a back seat, if that's all right with you guys. I was sick all morning. But
no,
it'll be mind. Like Jimmy Stewart, you know, in that film where he looks... into the
oh,
world without him. No, but...
Does
he do that a lot?
It's a Joe's house.
There's a rabbit only I can say.
But it's like, is it a wonderful life where he gets shown the world without him?
Yeah.
This is what it'll be like for me, just looking in at you guys.
Yep.
Good.
We're all clear on that. Luke makes his welcome return once again.
Have you got one for me, Pete? No? All right. Just... all right.
Yeah. No, they don't. You're just not showbiz.
No, I've not lost touch with our listener base, mate. That's probably the difference between me and Pete.
And James or Jim once again.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm back with the Renegade Master. So.
First of all, it's the old with Pete. It's the old automate. Listen to my someone calling my name. I haven't got to say it myself.
Are you still going on about that?
Then it's the old. Yeah. Oh, I'm ill. Everyone pity me.
Jealous.
If I was ill, Marcus, you wouldn't know because I wouldn't make a big deal out of it.
Outrageous.
Not well, true.
I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere. I'm going to start by reading an email. It says, "All the Reet Ramblers, I probably laughed as much as you guys did when Sol Campbell announced his intention to play in the 2010 World Cup while playing for Notts County. However, his return to Arsenal and his subsequent goal in the Champions League certainly had me thinking that he's made at least an adequate comeback, and indeed anything can happen in football. So, my question to you is, what is the best footballing comeback you can think of when players return from the wilderness?" That's from Dan Johnson, who is a Southampton fan.
Don't know, that slipped through the net.
Luke, you go first.
I'm going to go for Stephen Carr.
Mm. Okay,
good choice. Yeah. Was thinking about retiring. Left his club. Was like, oh, I'm not going to. I'm done. I'm finished.
Mm.
And then he obviously surfaced. Got I think it was a pay as you play deal at Birmingham, and impressed so much that he got offered a proper contract, and he's now club captain.
And now look at him.
He's having a wonderful season as well.
He's doing very well.
With Roger Johnson and Scott Dan and all those lot in the Birmingham defence.
Yep.
Was a big part of that sort of unbeaten 12-game run they went on earlier in the season.
That's right.
Okay, they're having a bit of a wobble, but he's still doing well.
He is.
And like I say, he's club captain, so I think Stephen Carr would be mine.
Okay, it's a contender for the points.
I'll just sit back and await the points.
James or Jim...
I am going to go for Paolo Rossi because he sort of really, really slipped. I forget the actual details of it, which is sort of
it's a former Italian
shame
striker
for me. Yeah, World Cup winner, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's right.
He was in prison.
Legend. Is that right?
82 was his World Cup
because he'd been like a sort of a real, real big hero, and then he had this really shocking time where he ended up going to prison, and I mean, it almost looked like he was going to retire. I think
right.
And then he came back, and they won the World Cup. He was the absolute star.
He was top scorer.
Yeah, weird parallels with him and Luca Toni as well, because Luca Toni was like sort of down in Serie C, wasn't he? Before he sort of joined Fiorentina and then started banging them in for them.
Cheers, James. Take my one. you're not getting a point. Pete.
He was truck driver, Luke. He was a truck driver, Lucas.
Yeah, he was.
You can have Lee Hughes.
Go on, I'll think of one before it gets to me. Go on.
Well, I mean, don't be blown away by mine. You got to listen to mine because I might win the points.
No, absolutely. The points.
Robert
are there.
Lee.
Oh, of course.
Rude Hullet stripped him of the captaincy and squad number when he came.
Do you know why that was, Pete?
Because he's an arrogant Dutchman. God knows they're the worst kind of Dutchman.
He's making the word Dutchman into an insult.
Clarence Seedorf and I disagree about that Dutchman.
But he gave the captaincy to Alan Shearer.
He relegated Shearer to the bench, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he wanted to be the biggest star of the club, basically, Hullett, and obviously he's never going to do that because, well, we didn't win the league, for example. We didn't win anything
again,
under him.
Yeah.
But Robson brought him back after a couple of years, and he was an absolutely devastating force in the midfield.
He was a brilliant player. I always thought that was really, really sad and just childish and petty, just such a waste of such a
player.
He had
to train on his own. He forced him to train on his own. He just
didn't
want him
anymore. That's unbelievable.
Because he was the captain and he was like the team spokesman. And Hullett didn't like it when Lee went, well, this is how we feel, basically. And he was like, go and train.
That is terrible behaviour from a manager. That's absolutely shocking.
It's Hoddle-esque. Hoddle
sorted himself out subsequently, I think.
Yeah, you love Hoddle, don't
you? No, I didn't like him when he was.
As a man, I mean, as a coach, he's decent.
But as I say, subsequently, after the England job, I think, you know, personality-wise, he might have sorted himself out a bit more. I have met him, and he's doing a wonderful thing, as we talked about in Spain.
Andy Burton.
You know. No, he's a nice guy. Shut up.
One thing I wanted to add about the Hullett thing, and just to touch on that, was when he relegated Shearer to the bench, it was for a derby, wasn't it? For a Newcastle Sunderland derby.
Was it?
And it eventually cost him his job, effectively, didn't it? Yeah.
Good.
Because the uproar was so immense.
Rob Lee, best man never to captain England.
No, I believe. Well, he played. and I believe somebody
did he?
Backed me up and said he did captain England once. So.
Well, I think that was you, England.
You or Robert Lee?
Hello, I am notable Newcastle United historian.
Bob Lee.
Don Peterson.
Well, I've had time to think, and I've got one.
Go on.
Robbie Fowler. When he went back to Liverpool.
It wasn't a roaring success, though, was it?
Well, hang on a minute.
Best footballing comeback were the words you used.
Well, James took my one of Luca Toni.
Well, I didn't actually, though, did I? You could have still had it.
Well, on principle, I'm going for Fowler.
Okay.
It was a comeback I enjoyed. Not as much as him. No, you're right. He was out of it. He was not literally. Well, he might have been. But he came back. It was a sensational return to Liverpool, you've got to say.
That was a great. It came full circle.
Yeah, it was nice to see.
But the only point I was making on that was that he arguably wasn't really that much of a success when he came back there.
No, he was all right.
He did all right. Mm.
Yeah.
Every time he scored, it was just joyous, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He only got a few goals for them, but it was brilliant.
I think you know I've got the points, and you're just getting on with it.
Honourable mention to Dybeck.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Dybeck, how many times do you want?
Yeah.
He did it for England and did it for... Where else did he do it?
I mean, well, he was like 23 when he had to do it the first time, so he's like... few cracks at it.
He'd done it twice for England. He did it first time round. He did it again when McLaren did that ill-advised ceremonious booting out of the squad.
God, yeah. You know, I even forgot all about that. Mm.
Well,
we should have gone for like Kenny Pavey in the future when he returns to England and
when he lifts the World Cup.
Excellent.
You know that film King Ralph where there's no one in line to the throne because everyone's died and they can't find anyone and King Ralph becomes king. I think it's John Goodman or John Candy, one of the two, and he becomes king. He's like this American guy.
Yeah.
That's what's happening with Pavey. Yeah. So all the midfielders are going to like be injured or go missing and stuff. There's going to be no one left and Pavey will come along.
He'll be there on merit, Luke.
Yeah, That's what I meant. Yeah.
The points are going to go to James or Jim with Paolo Rossi.
Two in a row.
Only because he took yours, because it was in your mind.
No, because Paolo Rossi's the best one.
So would you have given yourself the points today with Paolo Rossi?
No, because I was going for Luca Toni.
Okay.
Paolo Rossi's got them. End of chaps.
Fine, let's move on.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this afterwards.
Well, let's move straight on to the Premier League. Everton 3, Manchester United 1. Everton, a couple of big scalps of late.
Yeah, and they've got a decent running coming up now as well. Yeah. They could make a late push for fourth.
David Moyes almost smiled. I thought the world was going to end.
Terrifying.
Even when he smiles, it's quite scary. Everton and Arsenal have both got decent run-ins, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a real battle for them. For teams to keep up with them. But I thought that Ferguson's getting more magnanimous these days. Everton were the better side. I know Ferguson loved Moyes. He loves Moyes, doesn't he? Yeah. And Everton were the better side, but it doesn't normally sort of stand in the way of Ferguson.
He did surprise me there.
Yeah.
Well, Jack Rodwell and Dan Gosling scored goals for Everton. Good to see a couple of... I think they're local lads.
They are. Jack Rodwell from Southport, I think, which is right close. So
that's right. Yeah.
I mean,
ridiculously overhyped by Andy
Ray
Gray.
Ray went mental, basically, as you said, because Jack Rodwell paced past Johnny Evans, who was absolutely
exhausted by that point.
But Rodwell didn't do it particularly gracefully or anything. He just he came up to him and he knocked it past him and
great
finished.
Finish,
it was
great
a good it was a good finish. Yeah, but the way Gray, you've got to be a particularly special player, footballer, to do that. And I say footballer because that's what he is.
Well, that's cleared something up for me.
Bloody hell!
I thought it was a hot air balloonist.
It's like he's drinking on the job, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be honest, I think if there's one thing young English players need, though, it's to be massively, massively hyped when they do even one thing that's remotely good.
Get him on that plane!
He'll be flying it with his talent, Luke.
I couldn't believe how he was going
and
on.
And I say a plane, because that's what it is. But he did play well, and they all played well. It was a great performance by Everton. And Manchester United, do you know what it looked like to me? And it might be a bit of a simplified way of looking at it, but it looked like Rooney was trying way too hard to score against his old club.
Yeah.
And because the team are relying on them a lot, and I know Berbers have got a goal or whatever, but I mean, that was poor defending.
Nice fin.
It was, but it was poor defending. He had all sorts of time in the box.
Yeah.
They just didn't seem to have that fulcrum that they're so used to relying on this season, because he was trying too hard and he couldn't really get out of his feet or do what he wanted to do.
The Milan game is obviously going to have taken its toll as well, because it was a brilliant, brilliant game, wasn't it? It was very, very high tempo, so it's really, that's going to affect the players.
Absolutely. Chelsea beat Wolves.
Shock there, eh?
Yeah.
They laboured over it, though.
I thought Wolves were quite unlucky.
Terry was rubbish.
Really?
I don't want to get on the back of him just because of all these sort of off-the-pitch transgressions, but...
Has there been off-the-pitch stuff?
Apparently so.
Right, okay.
But he really, from what I saw... I didn't see the entire game. But I just saw the
beady eye of Luke Moore.
He made a couple of sort of quite high-profile howlers that I think a better side would have exploited.
Yeah,
You know, a couple of swing and misses and all sorts.
Do you think his place on the plane might be up for grabs? Sol Campbell.
I think probably him being on the plane was a problem from Dubai. I guess.
Probably
Sol tired.
Sol Campbell is massive now.
You've said that before.
He's got the biggest arse of any footballer I've ever seen.
Bigger than Des Walker's. He was notably
up there.
Large,
it's up there with
Des Walker's.
But Sol Campbell turns now like sort of like an old person turns when the pavement's all iced over.
Yeah,
like he's not really sure of his foot, and it takes so long to do it.
Yeah, he's not going to fall over now. He's going to have a fall.
Exactly. It's like the difference between walking somewhere and going for a walk. It's like, fall over, have a fall. But it seems like it's like quite serious with Sol Campbell.
That's right. Well, Arsenal beat Sunderland 2-0.
Mm-hmm. And that was quite laboured as well.
Yeah.
Last minute penalty to secure it.
But as we said, though, you know, United and Chelsea are dropping points. I mean, Chelsea, they drew away to Hull. Okay, they didn't drop points at Burnley, but they were fortunate to win there. They lost to Everton. I mean, Arsenal...
They've got a good run in.
You never know.
Every single game... No disservice to the other teams in the league, because there's obviously some good teams in that run that Arsenal have got, but you could honestly say that every single game Arsenal got now is winnable.
Arsenal have to just, they've got to spank someone to get that belief back.
Yeah, that's right. Aston Villa hammered Burnley 5-2.
Yeah.
And I love the commentator. He said, you know it's your day when Heskey scores, or some words to that effect.
I'm going to say something vaguely controversial. You guys may sort of take issue with it. I actually think that Emil Heskey is one of the best target men in the world. I genuinely believe that. There was so many... I know it's only against Burnley and stuff, and there's so many instances like against them where he looked like he could hold the ball up in the penalty area for as long as he wanted.
Sure.
No one could get near him.
The problem comes when he's actually delivering to someone, dispatching it to
possibly,
someone, I think, after that.
Yeah, possibly. But there's no one, other than one or two players...
But also in front of goal. Yeah. He's poor in
but
front
is that
of
his
goal.
Game, though? Is that his game?
Yeah, but...
To call him one of the best in the world.
No, target men.
Yeah, okay, I understand that, but... And I know that's not the point you're making. You're talking about...
Let me put it another way, then. There's not many players around who can bring other forward players into the game as well as him. In the world game, though.
All right, is it more accurate to say he's the best defensive striker in the world?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. But defensive strikers play more...
No, that's what Kevin Davies is a player like that. Yeah. That's very, very, very brilliant at what he does. Very brilliant.
Very brilliant. I like his skills.
Good.
I think we all do. Fulham beat Birmingham 2-1. Fulham going well.
Two wonder goals in that game.
Zamora.
Yeah.
Get him on the
plane. Now you're talking about world's best at holding it up, my man.
Tune in June for my suicide live on air. As promised, when Zamora gets his place on the plane.
I tell you something. I've gone to see Fulham a couple of times recently. Or the Barcelona of West London, if you will. Because that's
which we won't.
That's definitely not going to Chelsea, that title.
That's like when Sam Hammond called Cardiff the Barcelona of Northern Europe.
They're not.
That's what he said.
It's Fulham. I saw them against Burnley. They were excellent. I also saw them against Shakhtar Donetsk, who are a better side than Fulham.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
They've camped in their half for a good sort of...
They did. Well, at half-time it was 1-1, and it was fortunate it was 1-1. And I remember thinking, you know, they can hammer Fulham.
But Bobby's ease pops up, isn't he?
But, you know, but that's where you get your money from people like Roy Hodgson, because you think, well, what's Roy going to do for the second half?
Yeah. And did he change it around?
Well, whatever he did, it worked.
You don't know what he did. You can't remember.
Also, you've got to give a lot of credit to Hodgson in terms of what he's done with the players he's brought in, because Bobby Zamora did not look like a sort of great
he's
signing.
He's got a superb goal against Shakhtar.
It's a brilliant strike.
He's scored a lot of really good goals this season. He's been really, really good for them. Damien Duff as well. I mean, he was lost at Newcastle, I think it's fair to say. He really didn't look the same player he was at Chelsea. And I mean, he's not quite at those heights now, but he looks much better than he has been for a long time.
Well, even Al Fayed, he's playing his part.
Yeah.
Because apparently the Shakhtar Donetsk, they were turned away from the Harrods store. They were 2 days before they were playing against Fulham. The squad turned up to Harrods, spend a bit of cash, hard-earned cash, you know. Mm. But they turned up wearing their tracksuits, and they were denied entry to Harrods because... The group was
too big and suspicious.
The health and safety reason for not letting them in.
It's an interesting tactic from a shop owner.
I used to do it in Harrods. Not that I visit Harrods very often, but my ex-girlfriend visited a couple of times, and I've got this shirt that they've got press studs instead of buttons.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So she'd be walking in front, looking at perfume and stuff, and I'd be walking around behind her. But every time she's not looking, I'll undo another button until I'm completely topless and I'm just walking through the thing with her, but with my shirt open. She just got annoyed. And also just in this.
Ex-girlfriend, you say.
Why did you choose Harrods in particular?
Well, it's a really fancy shop.
Yeah,
people don't want you walking around. Jason Donovan got he wasn't allowed in because he didn't have a shirt on.
You've got to have a shirt.
You can take the boy out of Newcastle. You can't take Newcastle.
There's a Phoenix in Newcastle. Same rules.
Hang on, Jason Donovan was in there with, like, shirtless.
Yeah, why would you do that? If you're Jason Donovan.
Yeah.
Where does Kylie Minogue buy her kebabs?
Oh, up her sleeve. Jason's Donovan.
Jason's Donovan.
Well, that's inaccurate.
They're not even mates anymore.
Clearly goes to Belly Busters in Farnborough. So Shakhtar Donetsk, they've not been to Harrods. So,
I think that's
it. Yeah. Something else I'd like to clear up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not talking about that. We'll do that after. we talked about David James. I think it was last week where we were talking about.
Was it on Ramble Extra or was it the main Ramble?
No, it was. It was on the main podcast. But you can get Ramble Extra every Friday on 442.com. David James said that he does a column in the Guardian,
Observer. On a Sunday, yeah.
The Observer.
Yeah.
Forgive me.
Ghostwritten, no doubt.
That's probably not
people seem to think he writes it.
Yeah. But he was talking about his worst media moment when, during an interview, he said that he mentioned that he would play computer games for up to 8 hours at a time. Now, we mentioned him on, I think it was the last week's show.
It was the excuses bit at the beginning of the last week's show.
That's right. And he said that he'd played computer games for up to 8 hours at a time. And later on, after he'd spoken to the journalist, he said, oh, could you cut that bit out? But he said the editor really liked it, so he thought, oh, well, no harm, I'll let them keep it in. He said the next thing, it was being reported that he was addicted to computer games, and he said people now shout to him, oi, J-Mo, where's your Nintendo? And all this sort of
stuff. I've propagated that myth. I'm saying it.
So
I'm sure that's not. I mean, J-Mo knows better than me because it was him, but that's not quite how I remember it, I have to say.
Well.
But fair enough.
J-Mo strikes back.
He was obviously listening to the show.
Yeah, that's right.
And
why mention it now? That's what I say.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Seems strange to bring it up now, J-Mo. Yeah. Where's your Nintendo?
In the Championship, we're going to mention Robbie Savage again.
Yeah.
Not for something he did, something that was done to him.
Yeah.
Gorka Pintado.
Yeah, that's
Pintado?
Yeah, Swansea.
The Swansea player. Put in an absolute reducer on him.
That wasn't even in the realm of reducer. That was one of the worst challenges I've ever seen. That was possibly and maybe probably worse than Bell Hadji's tackle when the African Cup of Nations against Algeria in the semi-final.
I always wince a little bit extra on those challenges when it's on a player that's sort of coming to the end of his career. Because, you know, if they get a broken leg, that's probably it.
Might have a fall. But did you all see it? Because it was absolutely scandalous. Yeah. It sent him about 3 feet into the corner flag. Yeah. And then all the players piled over, which meant Pintado, the guy who made the initial challenge, got bowled over and was on the floor, underneath like a mosh pit of players. And he didn't even see his red card because he was lying down to so many people. He had to get told he was sent off. But it was an absolutely disgraceful challenge. Mm. Luckily, Savage was all right. He got up and...
Yeah. He's a hard man, Savage.
Well, he likes to think he is, Mark.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Mascherano was lucky not to go off as well.
Mm. Did you see Jermaine Defoe against Wigan? That was a wonderful challenge as well.
Defoe's a...
He's got to cut that out of his game.
Yeah, he really does.
I don't see why, on that, I don't see why Redknapp's not picking Pavlyuchenko over Crouch, because he's playing... Yeah. Crouch hasn't done an awful lot recently.
It was weird to see him take off Defoe, because the points weren't secure by any...
Maybe it's a temperament thing.
Mm. Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Maybe why he's going to get sent off.
But he's got to cut it out, because I can see him now. We sort of touch wood, Rooney sort of trying to sort himself out, maybe growing up a little bit, sorting that knife edge temper he's got out for the World Cup, hopefully. Last minute is Defoe to step into the breach and get sent off and cost us.
And the last thing Algeria need is Barcelona bound Belhadj to start.
If he goes to Barcelona, that'd be amazing. I think we'll all be very happy for him.
Apparently, Xavi mentioned that he thought he was a decent player.
I'm not going to go against one of the greatest midfielders of our generation.
And those proactive journalists of...
One thing I've done more than Xavi, I reckon, is watch Belhadj play. It's possibly the only part in life I feel more authoritative to talk about than Xavi. Belhadj is not very good at the back. He's quite good going forward.
He's a winger. He's a left winger for me.
And what I mean when I say he's quite good going forward is I mean that he's fast.
Yeah, and good shot on him.
He's all right. He's a decent player, but he's a liability at the back.
Yeah. I remember, he looks really, really impressive against Milan. I remember that he was absolutely bossing the left.
Yeah. When he's a conference player, and when he's enjoying his football, going forward, he is a bit of a handful. And that goal he scored against Southampton, where he sent the keeper down, was a nice touch as well. But I don't think he's Barcelona class personally.
Absolutely. Going back to the original point, Swansea did beat Derby at Derby, and they're currently fourth. And we got an email. From a certain Ben Pugsley. He said, "Hi lads, as a child my uncle regularly took me to watch this particular side, sometimes in the third but usually fourth tier, and I enjoyed the games, but they always seemed to be struggling, this team. In fact, the year I moved away from the area, the club were in dire financial straits, having been sold for £1 in 2001, facing relegation to the Conference. Since then, the club have left their traditional home and are now tenants in another stadium. There's no great stability with regards to managers. The club has spent conservatively. The team star has been injured for the best part of two seasons, and they lost their star striker in the summer. Could someone please shed some light on how on earth we could quite possibly be seeing Swansea City in the Premier League next season?"
Well... I mean, they're not big scorers. I think that is the sort of major sort of top line stat from their season so far. But what they are pretty good, as we saw against Derby at doing, is grinding out wins, and they don't concede an awful lot. Mm. And whilst I don't think they'll get promoted, I think they'll probably just drop off short, because I think Newcastle, West Brom and Forest are all better sides than them.
Go on, the Swans.
It doesn't always work like that. I mean, when you get in the playoffs, it is something of a lottery. I mean, you know, teams who possibly, arguably don't deserve to go up, do sometimes go up. Yeah, and so Swansea could do it. I don't think they will. But they're just tight, and they don't concede an awful lot. Mm. And Jason Scotland was going to be I thought they'll really struggle without him. He's not scored a single goal in the Premier League.
No, he's looked way out of his depth.
It shows you the difference. I think he's the player with the most amount of shots without scoring in the Premier League this season. Yeah.
Well, we mentioned Ebanks Blake on the previous show.
He's been farmed out on loan to somewhere else, hasn't he?
That's right, yeah.
But I mean, they're just good at grinding out results, basically. Mm. But I mean, I think they'd really struggle in the Premier League should they get promoted.
I'd like to see them in the Premier League. I think it'd be really interesting to have a Welsh team up there.
Yeah,
it'd be fun.
Cardiff would be gutted. They've been sort of knocking it off for a while. Yeah.
Newcastle look as though they're going to get promoted. PT.
Yeah,
3-0 at Preston. At home to Preston.
Yeah, I mean we've lost the lead. We've sort of cut that lead down to two fairly recently, and we sort of built it back up again with sort of Forest dropping points and
Lovren-Kranz playing well.
Yeah, he's playing all right since he came back, and I kind of fear for the squad in the Premiership, to be quite frank. I think there's a lot of average footballers still, but we had that problem last season. That said, we're not playing particularly well. We've got too many strikers that aren't of Premiership quality or even decent Championship quality, I think.
But they are top of the Championship. You know, we've talked up sides
Forest in previous weeks. You wonder what will happen with their ownership in the summer if they do go up. I mean, what's Ashley going to do? Is he going to pump money in? Is he going to say, right, let's get
I think he'll still be in charge. I just think we'll have a torrid time in the Premiership. I mean, we have been a couple of good signs, like Van Aanholt from, I think he came from Chelsea, I think, he's had his loan extended. But a lot of these are loan players. Williamson, I really like, and we've got a fairly tidy defence at the moment, which is quite good. But I genuinely fear for next season if we don't get a decent,
you just have to hit the target.
I think.
I think Newcastle is such a big club that if they went up, I don't think it would be as much of a problem attracting players to the side.
Yeah. I mean, they had the second biggest attendance in the whole of the professional leagues in England on the weekend. I think.
Yeah.
I think it'd be quite similar to when West Ham came back up, and it was just like, oh, they're back. You know what I mean? It was quite a simple transition for them.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously West Ham are a bit of a sort of strange beast in that one season they'll nearly go down, then they'll be fine the next season. It just sort of repeats itself. But I think maybe this is because I don't follow Newcastle as close as you do, Pete, but Mike Ashley does seem to have learned to just shut up.
Yeah.
Well, it's attracting a lot less of sort of negative press, which is can only be good for them.
Well, Newcastle are a team, I think we can all say, all joking aside, and this was true of West Ham, Jimbo.
They are a team.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. I'll call them a team.
Newcastle,
I'll call them a team because that's what they are. I don't know why we're all Cornish then. Anyway, but they're a team who are big enough, a club that are big enough, like West Ham. They deserve to be in the Premier League. You know, they're a big side. They're well supported, good infrastructure. You know, they've done stuff in the Premier League recently. You know, so they should get promoted this season. And I think, like I say, they won't have as much trouble attracting players as maybe Swansea would if they got promoted.
Yeah.
In Dorset, Weymouth fans are being offered free entry for this week's game against Braintree Town, which would have been played by the time this comes out. The reason why they're being offered free entry is because the club are apologising for their heavy defeat at Basingstoke Town. The Terrors, as they're called, they lost 6-0 with Basingstoke striker Mitchell Bryant breaking the conference record by scoring all 6 goals.
Double hat trick.
Double hat trick.
That's a great afternoon for him.
A haul and a brace.
Well, the Weymouth chairman, George Rolls.
That is a chairman's name. Georgie Rolls.
That's how he rolls.
I can imagine him rolling down the hill, eating a roll in a Rolls Royce. A ramble roll seems appropriate.
Stevie Hobbs' ramble roll.
Maverick Vapor Steve Hobbs.
Vapor?
I don't know.
He'll take
Vapor?
It.
Kind of works.
Not to be confused with Kurt Baker.
That's right.
He's another one of our listeners.
Or
we know
Kurt
Douglas.
Yeah, George Rolls, he issued an apology saying that the performance was embarrassing. He told the club website, "This is not what we at the football club expect, and you, as paying fans, do not deserve." So, free entry.
It's good. All right. I just hope they don't get spanked again.
Yeah. Then they'll pay them to turn up.
Yeah. Well, it's almost similar to when Wigan got smashed 9 by Spurs and then they got the money transfer money paid for and stuff, didn't they? It's a lovely little touch. It's almost similar to the old thing we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where the pay what you want policy.
That's right. Mm.
Good.
Good.
Better.
In Munich, there is a new kit on show. The Munich 18...
on the block.
The zoo. Good one, James. If only I'd have thought of that.
Do your job, Marcus, yeah.
If you'd let me. Okay, you cheeky so-and-so. 1860 Munich. They have a new kit. This is for their 150th year, celebrating that. They wanted to pay homage to their history through the design of this kit. So what they've done is they've stitched their entire history into the kit.
Yeah, I've
seen a lot of stitching.
There's a lot of stitching. Yeah.
Surely screen printed.
Yeah, it is.
It really. I can't have a look at that. So 1860 Munich, you know, 150th anniversary kit, whatever.
Can I say, great idea, poor execution?
Absolutely.
It looks quite bad. It looks like, you know, when
it looks like you're having a stroke.
Yeah, it's really. It's got a hard thing to look at. Mm. It's like a graffiti kit.
It's too much going on. Yeah.
It's a nice idea though.
Like, it's when blue, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's reversible though, so they've got a sensible kit and that crazy.
That's right.
See, the thing is, I hope they use it, because Getafe, the Burger King kit, they don't use it, do they?
No. If you've got a reversible kit, can sort of the players choose which side to have? So you've got like maybe 5 of you with one and the rest
Alex
with the
Ferguson,
other.
They might be difficult to see.
I remember some... Well, it's not similar, but it's a kind of a quirky idea like this. Do you remember Alaves?
Yes.
In Spain, who Liverpool beat in the UEFA Cup.
5-4. Mm. Yeah. 5-4, wasn't it? Big game.
That's right. I remember when... I can't remember why, maybe...
Jordi Cruyff's Alaves.
Yes. That's right, yeah. Yes. Yeah. They played... I think they had, like, a Boca Juniors-esque top.
Yeah.
They had a kit. It was celebrating a particular landmark in their history. And the kit... And a friend of mine, he was a Liverpool fan, and he went to watch the game, and he switched kits, and he showed me. The kit had in... But it was stitched in the same colour, so it didn't kind of... It wasn't covered in names. It was the names of all the season ticket holders on this kit.
Nice.
Covered in this kit. But, like, as I say, from a distance, you wouldn't really see that. No. But it was
that's great.
I thought it was brilliant.
How did they fit that in? Didn't Manchester United do a blue and white one with, like, McClare?
That's right. Arsenal had a kit a few seasons ago where it was like there was a story of Arsenal's history actually written on it in sort of like handwriting.
There was a kid in that we used to play football. There was a kid we used to play football with down the rec near my house. He had the word Fowier, which was supposed to say Fowler, but he'd written the L in a lowercase, just the L though, so he called him Robbie Fowier. Oh, there's Robbie Fowier down there. Yeah.
Nice.
Same place I played with Michael Brown, the footballer.
Did you used to play with him, did you?
No, once we did, but it was very exciting.
I bet he was really dirty.
Did you have a long
He was very off. Easy on us. He was very easy was on it? Us, yeah. But you could tell the quality even then, Luke. Yeah. You could tell the quality even then.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, that's what he said about me.
Well, you say that, but I've watched it at Pompey a couple of times this season.
In Serie A, or in Brazil, should I say, Adriano has opened the door to a sensational return to Italy with Roma.
He's the emperor. He can do what he wants.
he said, I would very much like to have the chance to join Roma and have the chance to play alongside Francesco Totti.
See, are Inter sort of going, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Like, you know that when we said you could go for nothing to Brazil because you felt a bit depressed and that? Mm. Like, and now we're just seeing you at Carnival, getting completely rat-arsed. Now you're coming back to play for a team, you know, a rival team. Come on, how much is he going to test their patience?
Well, I don't know. Maybe Inter might like it. I mean, Roma are second. So he might kind of break
maybe
up the
double agent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is a contract drawn up by the same bloke who did Lua Lua, isn't it? He's hurt us. He's hurt himself at the carnival.
Yeah.
Well, I think Luca Toni might be annoyed. He's probably enjoying playing up front with Totti.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They might play with Totti behind, couldn't they?
Well, get them all on the pitch.
Yeah, whatever.
He said it would be fantastic for me to return to Italy because I have wonderful memories from there.
Well, apart from the time when you were really depressed and had well-documented personal problems, which meant you had to leave.
Well, his contract... let's not make light of such things.
No, of course not.
Adriano's contract with Flamengo does expire at the end of the current campaign. So he will be a free agent soon.
Do you know what I think? Mourinho said,
Mourinho
said you can go. And obviously we all thought, oh, that's a really nice, you know, one of the few examples of sort of altruism in football.
Yeah.
He's letting them go to sort himself out. What he's actually said behind the scenes is, you must come back, and whoever our sort of nearest title rivals are, you've got to ruin them.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's what's happening. So Adriano's going to miss loads of sitters. Adriano's going to turn like Chris Iwolumo and miss loads of chances. Yeah.
Across the city to the red and black half, Leonardo.
Again, it's just across the stadium, really, isn't it?
Well, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. figuratively speaking, though, Marcus, we're with you.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the camp's divided, frankly.
That's right. The Milan coach, Leonardo, apparently he's been... Silvio Berlusconi has been spouting off. You'd never believe that, would you? He's hit back at him because Berlusconi's been...
Well, Leonardo's not said anything.
Berlusconi's Leonardo's hitting back
to
Berlusconi.
Right, yeah.
Berlusconi
was a statue, perhaps.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
He's criticising the team. Berlusconi was. He slated them for their performance against Manchester United when they lost 3-2 at home. But he's come out and said, if the president wants me to leave, he just needs to say the word. He said, it doesn't do me any harm either because we have a mature team. I've been at this club for 13 years and the president only needs to say one word. Just one.
It makes it out like it's some sort of code word.
Leonardo, yeah. He's getting tough.
Leonardo alone. He's a beautiful boy.
Well, exactly.
He's a beautiful boy.
Imagine how annoying that would be. That would be like Arsene Wenger getting regular criticism from Gordon Brown. It's just weird.
Yeah, I'd hate to be a Milan, Real Madrid supporter just for these sort of reasons. It's just all bullshit.
Leonardo is a very, very, very handsome chap. Superb footballer.
Good hair.
And a
great mane.
A lovely set of flowing locks. on his head.
Who was it said recently? That,
give him a bit of respect.
They realised what an international man he was when... Apparently, he talks all these different languages. Yeah. So he'll talk Portuguese to the Brazilian lads. Then he'll talk English to Beckham. Yeah. Then he'll talk Italian to these guys. He
loves it.
All over it.
Great stuff.
All over it.
I think, you know, Leonardo has had a little bit... He went for a sticky patch when he first took over. He's bedding in okay. They go for a little bit of a
but
wobble.
But is it his first job? First big job, certainly.
Berlusconi effectively would have given him the job.
Yeah, I mean, they're third. They're 7 points behind Inter with a game in hand.
They beat Bari last night away, 2-0. Mm,
that's right, yeah. So
great goal from Borriello as well, yeah, in that.
He's a superb footballer.
He is a good player. He is a good player.
Sort of scissor kick.
But Inter, they are dropping points of late. It's a shame that... I mean, Roma have suddenly come into it, you know, and if Milan can just keep on winning, because Inter, they drew at home against Sampdoria 0-0.
God, I was really disappointed with Sampdoria. Inter had both their centre-half sent off in
the
first half.
Well, they had Walter Samuel and Ivan Cordoba sent off on 30 and 38 minutes.
Cordoba is a dirty bastard. He is a dirty bastard, Cordoba.
But Samp did have Pazzini sent off.
Yeah, but that was
on 74th minute, yeah, you know.
Well,
did you see Mourinho?
He was miming,
kind of, I'm showing you now. The cuffing,
the
like, as if his hands were cuffed.
Well, he was going off on one before the game about how the referees were against Inter and stuff.
Yeah,
and conspiracy.
That's right.
He's unrivalled at galvanising his team in like a siege mentality.
Yeah.
But my favourite part of Mourinho...
Maradona?
In that game was when... Oh, yeah. when Mourinho... what happened was Samuel Eto'o made one of the worst dives I've ever seen to try and get a penalty. And Mourinho was laughing, like crying with laughter. I didn't know whether he was laughing because of the dive or he was laughing because the referee wasn't giving him anything. I think it was probably the latter, but it was a terrible dive.
Right.
Well, apparently there's been a lot of stuff going like that in Italy with the referees. Actually, as there has been here, and the Napoli fans have been really annoyed with a lot of decisions going against them, so they've been wearing masks of Pierluigi Collina.
I saw that.
In the stands.
The referee thing in England is a bit of a misnomer, because most recently, that was this weekend just gone, sort of propagated by Steve Bruce, who piped up and said, oh, well, that penalty in the last minute which killed the game for Arsenal, you got to ask, would that have been given down the other end?
I mean,
it's only Arsenal's second penalty in the whole season.
I mean, more in terms of when you look at the Defoe offside and the Champions League with Bayern Munich as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's crazy. I don't see... Steve Bruce is one of the... Like I said, he's one of the Statler and Waldorf of moaning twats.
And wonderfully pointed out by your good self, Luke, he does look like an old lesbian. Lest we forget. We were talking about Serie A, talking about Leonardo. How did we get on to Steve Bruce?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Two peas in the pod, those two, aren't they? One's a cosmopolitan man, speaks many languages, loves a beautiful game, and the other one's Leonardo.
Hey. It was all there for you. It was all there for you. Francisco Varallo, or Varallo, depending on the pronunciation. Who is he, I hear you cry? Well... Thank you, Pete. Well, he's the last survivor of the first World Cup final, which was held in Uruguay in 1930. He was an Argentinian player and played in the final, which was Uruguay-Argentina, which Uruguay won 4-2. And he recently celebrated his 100th birthday.
Yeah, I reckon he's probably got a good shout of being the oldest living footballer.
Is that? Yeah.
Probably. I don't know if that's true, but he's definitely going to be up there. 100 years old. He would have been...
It's either him or Kanu.
More on that later. He would have been 20 years old when that World Cup final took place, wouldn't he?
That's right, yeah. He was the youngest player on the pitch, I think.
He was one hell of a player. He was a striker, wasn't he?
He was a striker. He played for Boca for the vast majority of his career.
Scored a load of goals for Boca.
Yeah, he did. He scored 194 goals in 222 matches.
Was it a record, wasn't that? Sorry?
It was a record. That stood until the record was broken recently by Martin Palermo.
St. Martin Palermo.
Who we've talked about before.
Yeah.
I read about this as well. He's been awarded the FIFA Order of Merit, which is like sort of the highest honour you can get.
That's a huge honour.
Yeah, it's like the
from
St. George's
the most dishonourable organisation.
And people like Pelé and Franz Beckenbauer and Bobby Moore have had that as well. So that's a huge, huge honour.
That is outrageous.
It's interesting as well that he has scored so many goals and he's not just some sort of like kind of journeyman.
That's right.
Like,
yeah,
sort
yeah,
of
yeah.
substitute left back.
Yeah, no, he was a player.
An actual incredible player.
He was a player. Well, with regards to the scoring record. He said that they said, oh, what do you think of Palermo, you know, when he overtook his record, and he went, do you know any goal scorers who like their records being broken? He said, I'm happy that Palermo's scoring goals because he's a cracking lad, but I can't say I enjoy the fact that he's taken my record.
I haven't thought of a 100-year-old man describing someone as a cracking lad in Spanish.
Maybe not a literal translation
But yeah, fair play to us, great stuff.
Well, yeah, they celebrated they went to a theatre in La Plata, which is very close to Buenos Aires, where he's from, and they put images of the first World Cup onto the screen relived it a bit. But he was saying that when looking back on it, he said that apparently he was injured for quite a lot of that final, but because he weren't allowed substitutes, he had to struggle on. Yeah, he said, "I aggravated my injury when I hit the bar with a shot that could have won it for us. I couldn't even walk, and from that point on, Uruguay started to get stronger." He said, "But with all due respect to my teammates, they weren't gutsy enough. How I cried that day. Even now, when I look back, it still makes me angry."
They're all dead. They're not going to get back at him.
No, true. What a great man.
I know. Well, yeah.
100 years old. Good effort.
El Diego's having that.
Yeah. El Diego
probably call him up. Yeah.
Oh, just ahead of me. Jinx. I was just there. I was right there.
I tell you what's really fun and really awesome. Just a lucid 100-year-old man. There's nothing better. Yeah.
That's right. Stuff. I want to. He was given by the Argentinian Football Association his own Argentina shirt with his name on the back with the number 100.
Oh, great. And his nickname was a Little Cannon, wasn't it?
That's right. He was a very powerful player, is obviously that name.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's cracking.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, well, let's move on from ageing players that are linked to the game of football. Nigeria.
There we go.
Apparently, a stream of bloggers from some of Nigeria's most popular websites have been writing in response to everyone's allegations about the ages of certain players in the Nigerian national team. It started when a former manager of one of the leading Nigerian clubs said that what happened in Angola with regards to the African Cup of Nations is confirmation of what's been happening in the past, where most of our players falsified their age during the competition. So most players are beyond the age they professed, and this made it impossible for them to withstand the pace of teams like Zambia and Benin. Mm.
Yeah. It does go to show you what he was also saying was that there's a lot of players who seem to be absolutely amazing, like under 18.
That's
level,
right.
Yeah. And they just disappear into oblivion. It's obviously because they're quite a bit older than they say they are.
Well, yeah. The claims are, as we've suspected before, that Kanu's his official age is 33, but his real age apparently is 42. Mm-hmm. I think we're all agreed there. Obafemi Martins is not 25, but 32. You see, now, 25. Ladies and gentlemen, we actually just stopped recording there, because even reading that, I thought, no, he's not 25. He's 28 at least, or 29. Yeah. And you all said, no, we just checked that. He does claim to be 25.
But I remember him being sort of, when he was at Inter, he was sort of like touted as being this sort of young, amazing player. But even then, he was like 21, 22, whatever. They don't seem to actually update their ages as according to the normal laws of the passing of time.
This isn't like test Daily pretending. it's gonna come. You can't just stick a load of Vaseline on the lens when you're recording.
No, exactly.
Obafemi Martins running around.
But didn't he play for a Greek side first and then move to Inter?
The best thing about that whole story is the fact that they're saying Taribo West is his late 50s. Yeah, and he retired like 3 years.
Well,
ago.
It says Jay. Didn't Martin start a Greek side? And then he went to Inter, is that right?
He's definitely played at a couple of clubs before he went to Newcastle, definitely.
Well, at Inter he's about 18.
Yeah, you're talking. Yeah.
And that was about I don't know how long ago. Yeah, JJ Okocha apparently is 10 years older than his official age. And as Luke said, Taribo West, whose playing career ended only 2 years ago, they reckon he's in late 50s.
I wonder if it works both ways. It'd be funny to find out if, like, maybe Yakubu's only about 9.
Yeah. Yakubu's definitely older than his as well.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I think they should be applauded.
Well, it's
I think they should be
applauded. Khan is 42 playing in the Premier League, ladies and gentlemen.
Just get rid of all the Nigerian players in the world, and they got to start over again.
I noticed when Pompey played Stoke that I was thinking to myself, if you're a player playing with Kanu, because obviously he came on, you always know where he's going to be when you're on the pass him, because he's where he was when you last saw him. Yeah. He never moves. He's probably the most immobile player.
Well, apparently, he must be so rich. Like, I know he's won everything, and his record sort of states that he has won pretty much everything. Yeah.
He's been around for so long.
Law of averages as much as anything else.
But the whole point of the article, which is probably a more serious one, is that it's so corrupt that as long as you've got the money, you can pay for any sort of passport you want.
That's right, you can go in and...
It may get to a situation where European clubs will start asking for sort of MRI scans and stuff like that before they sign Nigerian players.
Well, you say about the forged documents and so on, they're very, very easy to get hold of, but this is the other end of the practical joke. Apparently, a former employee of the British Embassy in Nigeria told one of our papers that that when visa applicants complained to him about having their applications rejected, he would reply, "Well, don't talk to me about it, I'm dead." And they would look at him and, "What?" And he would just point at the wall behind him, which where his death certificate was hanging.
he got a forged one.
Just you know? To make a point, by the looks of it.
Well, yeah. I'm not coming to work on Monday. Yeah. Well, have you seen the wall?
Yeah.
But FIFA reckon they have finally come up with a foolproof way of determining the real age. They are announcing that players are going to be subjected to wrist scans using magnetic...
MRI
scans, yeah. We talked about the bone scans.
Well, the saga continues, then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think MRI scans should be standard for any footballer. I mean, you can forge documents.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's nothing to stop you doing that.
Well, from the police.
It's a moral detritus.
Yeah. It is.
Yo, what's popping? I'm Ron Ricketts.
Yo, what's popping? Here's the emails.
Better. It is emails, ladies and gentlemen. James or Jim, I'd love it if you went first.
Well, I'm happy to oblige. Ramble Force, ho, and all that. This is one final cry for membership of the Bring Back Barry Davis for South Africa 2010 Facebook group before I begin to email various TV stations. That's right, the group was not just set up in an attempt to win the Championship Manager goodie bag. Keep up the good work. That's from Andrew Ree in County Down. So, yeah.
Go on, Andrew.
Get on that, everyone. We'll post a link on the website because obviously we all want Barry Davis back, even if we have to hound him into doing it when he doesn't want to.
If we can't get him back on the telly, we'll get him on the Ramble. That's a big shout.
Oh, don't.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah. If you are Barry Davis, give us a ring.
Yeah. Not just a bloke called Barry Davis.
No.
Demon,
we want the voice.
Yeah.
We want the voice.
Don't we all.
Lukey, have you got one?
Yes.
Well, read it.
Ramble Animals, ho! Bit of a poor start. Me and a couple of mates have just been to Madrid for a football-fueled weekend to get a glimpse of the Santiago Bernabeu and to see the Atletico Barca match. Which wouldn't have been at the Bernabeu, oddly. So I thought I'd share some of the highlights. Following on from you talking about weird things people have said and done at the stands at the games, I thought I'd tell you about our experience in the Calderon.
Oh, good man.
We were happy with our occasional cries of putas catalans, which means something very rude in Spanish, the only vaguely offensive Spanish we could muster, but one man in front of us would every so often calmly stand up and just give the pitch his middle finger before sitting back down again, no shouting or anything. It was surreal. But most importantly, Greeny, I take it that's his mate, did what no one else has ever done before and never likely to do, and stepped out of the Real Madrid tunnel in a Hull City shirt with Bullard 21 on the back. It really is a great stadium. Took us about 3 hours to complete the tour. We were loving it. Nearly beat the new camp for me. What are your favourite stadiums? Cheers, boys. Chris Simons.
That's a good email.
Yeah.
Good email.
Favourite stadiums, then?
Well, the new camp's an obvious one that we all love, I think.
I like the new camp would probably be... The old Wembley, I had a bit of an affection
old
for that.
Old Wembley.
So Highbury was a nice one.
Yeah, I miss Highbury. Yeah. Stadio Olimpico.
La Bombonera, nice. Chocolate Box Boys. Oh, where Boca play. Can I throw that one in there? Yeah.
The Rose Bowl. The first sort of... Was that the first sort of circular... You know when they cut the grass in a certain way?
Grandstand.
It's circular.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know if that was...
It's the first time I'd seen that, I think.
The Bombonera's got to be a good one. That's a great shout.
It is a good one, yeah.
Yeah, but Fratton Park.
Do you know the one I... Yeah. I wasn't going to say. The one I always think looks a bit interesting on TV. I wouldn't say it's the best, but it's quite small. Is Monaco Stadium.
Oh, yeah. What's the one with the big... was cut into the side of a rock?
It's in Portugal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's... Is it Braga Stadium or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
I like any sort of new stadium... I like any stadium that's not been rebuilt in the same bloody way. Like, Darlington's one looks exactly the same like the Stadium of Light one.
Yeah,
and
they
all look the bloody same. It drives me absolutely
like
mental.
Like IKEA stadiums out of a box.
The new camp special. It's dug into the ground. Yeah, it's very high,
and
very steep.
TV cannot even begin to show you how big it is. It's just... I was really surprised by the size.
It's like little things, isn't it? It's like the Villa clock tower and stuff like that. Just kind of like idiosyncrasies that you don't get everywhere.
The cottage at Craven Cottage.
That's brilliant, though.
Yeah.
Well, the Azteca is a special one.
There's a pitch in South America somewhere that's got a tree in the middle of it. They only use it for like exhibition games and stuff like that, but they
use it. Is that one of the goalposts?
No, it's right in the middle of the pitch. It's really bizarre.
It's daft. Why didn't somebody
get
rid of that?
The halfway line is the equator. And so you play in different hemispheres.
Wow.
That's
really?
Yeah, in Brazil, okay. Yeah. But Estadio Azteca's got to be, because that's in the Hall of Fame.
we've got Azteca.
Yeah.
No, we haven't been there. Probably never will.
Well, speak for yourself.
Okay. Pete, have you got an email?
Yes, I have, yes. It's from a young gentleman by the name of Dave McIntosh. He says, "Afternoon, Ramblers. I've just returned from holiday in Egypt, where I thought I'd use football knowledge to engage with our taxi driver. I started off with the Midor chat," which seems to be, I imagine, standard for Englishmen talking to Egyptians, "but was running out of conversation rapidly, so I thought I'd mention the Africa Cup of Nations. He was loving it, but then I foolishly made a joke about Algeria getting to the World Cup at Egypt's expense."
Oh, dear.
"That was a mistake. He was not happy. He slammed on the brakes and started abusing Algeria in his shabby English."
Wow.
I doubt a Saints fan would have taken things that badly. Anyway, I'm off to watch Kenny Pavey on YouTube.
Yeah. Good choice.
Yeah. It's funny, Amir Zaki went on a rant, didn't he, when they was talking he was going to sign for Portsmouth, and he went, "I'm not signing for Portsmouth because I got two Algerians and a Jewish manager."
No!
Yeah, he did say that.
Amir Zaki said that, yeah.
Absolutely. That's genuinely
outrageous.
Shockingly awful.
Should be fined for that.
Yeah, no, and, big time.
Speaking of Mido, I saw Mido once.
That's terrible.
They said to Mido, what he had one of these like, interviews, and said, "What would you be if you weren't a footballer?" And he was like, "I'd probably just do nothing. My family's minted." he's like a multi-millionaire.
Yeah. Well, I think the championship manager goodie bag will be going to Chris Simmons for his little story, going all the way to Atletico Madrid and coming back with a lovely little story about that man. So, yeah, championship manager goodie bag is on its way to you, Chris. And, ladies and gentlemen, we do read out emails on the Football Ramble Extra over at 442.com. So you tune in there if you've sent us an email, because it may well get read out there. Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. And we have an all-time great going in today. Mm. No less. It is Sir Stanley Matthews.
Nice.
Endorsed already by the two chaps to my right.
I know it's going to be nice.
Round of applause. No. This week is the 10th anniversary of his death. He died on the 23rd of February 2000 at the age of 85.
Still playing, weren't they? Yeah. Very, very late on his career, from what I remember.
Very well, yeah. He was an icon of English football and one of the game's true ambassadors, I think we can all agree. He was the type of footballer who lived for the game and worked extremely hard on and off the pitch to improve his performance and fitness. So Stanley Matthews, he was a superbly gifted right winger and one of the greatest players ever to play the game. One could describe him as a thin, frail-looking man. Mm.
He's back when every bloke looked old.
he looked black and white.
Bradley from Bath.
I can imagine in real life he was black and white.
Yeah.
Every bloke looked old. He had skills that were, you know, really ahead of his time. Wonderful ball control, excellent body swerve, and a marvellous sense of balance and timing. My granddad always used to tell me about them. He says, "Oh, he'd fake to go one way and then go the other." And I think, really, is that? And he was like, "No, seriously, that doesn't sound all that." He was a master of it, an absolute master, and very, very quick. He had sudden bursts of speed over 20 to 30 yards that was just nobody could get near him. Yeah. You know. All this skill gave him the nickname the Wizard of the Dribble.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Which is what you want. And again, he was a pinpoint crossing as well. Great provider of goals. But he was born on the 1st of February 1915 in Stoke-on-Trent.
42 years.
Yeah.
No, 52 years.
52. Yeah. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah, before the Summer of Love.
That's how long ago, before the Summer of Love. He played for England schoolboys when he was spotted by Stoke City, and he signed for them in 1932. And by the following season, he was one of the big players in the Stoke side. England debut followed in 1934. He scored when England beat Wales 4-0, and his reputation was known throughout the land, and his talent was as well. And by the age of 20 in 1935, he was one of the biggest footballing stars in the country. In 1938, he asked for a transfer away from Stoke City, but a crowd of nearly 4,000 fans turned up at the ground. They begged him to stay.
Wow.
Great stuff.
And he did. Now,
it's like the old version of like Henri, that used to do every year at Arsenal.
Yeah, that's right.
I would stay if they want me to stay.
Yeah. By the time he was 24 in 1939, he played 256 games for Stoke City. But, of course, 1939, World War II had broken out. And for the next 6 years, bearing in mind he's 24, for 6 years, in those crucial years of his playing career, he was a member of the Royal Air Force. Hey, he's a member of the RAF. What about that?
Yeah, nice.
Nothing but the best. He still played in a number of friendlies during this time, and he was, I suppose, a guest player, if you like, for Manchester United, Blackpool and Arsenal, among others, and still represented England, but of course it wasn't so official while wartime was on.
I thought you were going to say he still played football, but it was from the air. Providing aerial assaults.
Dribbling past Spitfires.
Jinky winger.
So, yeah, I mean, six of his best years for most players between sort of the age of 24 and 30 were taken away from him. But after he served in the RAF during the Second World War, there was a bit of a falling out with Stoke City, and he was transferred to Blackpool in 1947 for £11,500. This was all despite protests from supporters.
That's a massive amount then as well.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And the Blackpool manager at the time, Joe Smith, said to Sir Stanley Matthews, he said, "You're 32 now. Do you think you can make it for another couple of years?" Well, he did. He famously teamed up with Stan Mortensen, who was a great goal scorer.
He scored three goals in the FA Cup final.
That's right.
Mortensen, and it was known as the Matthews final.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Well, while he was at Blackpool, yeah. By the end of the season, he'd won the first ever Footballer of the Year award to Stanley Matthews. And he was a runners-up medal in the FA Cup final. And there was a moment when he played for England at this point where apparently he famously took the ball past when they were playing Italy, his marker. And he got so far ahead of him so quickly that while he was wasting time in the corner, Matthews, apparently he stopped and like sort of combed his hair back and all this.
Oh, stuff. Nice. That is nice.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a myth that some people actually suggest he took a comb out of his shorts and combed his hair back, but I think that's
the most premeditated display of hubris ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was involved in a few FA Cup finals, but as Luke said, the Matthews final is, of course, the one where he really stamped his mark on that one. Despite Mortensen scoring a hat-trick, it just shows how influential that Matthews was in that final, because the final was remembered as the Matthews final. You know, his team were 3-1 down, and he grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck and set up a few goals, and they beat.
Put a few on the plate.
That's right.
Pop bang, lovely.
4-3 winners.
Yeah.
He got the medal. He got the winner's medal.
Put your clothes on, chaps. It's all over.
That's right. This is possibly my favourite fact about Sir Stanley Matthews. He was the first European Footballer of the Year.
Nice.
Nice.
That's great stuff.
Yeah. That's a huge honour.
At the age of 41. Oh!
Cracking.
Wow.
That's a lifetime cracking. Achievement award. Yeah. If
that is sensational stuff.
And that was a feat not repeated until Kanu. In 1984.
I love that. So with regards to Joe Smith, you're 32. Do you think you can make it for another couple of years? Well, he's European Footballer of the Year at 41.
9 years later.
That's right. Yeah. In 1957, he was awarded the CBE. An MBE just wasn't enough for this man. And he played his last game for England in 1957. And it makes him
41 or 42.
42. Yeah. Makes him the oldest player ever to perform for England at the age of 42. At the age of 46, he rejoined Stoke City.
Revo West.
And it's described as he transformed the team both on and off the field. Gates rose from 9,000 to 36,000 within a season, and Stoke had gained promotion. And he was knighted in 1964. And he retired a year later at the age of 50. He retired at 50. He was not booked during that incredible career of his, which spanned about 33 years. And of course, finished at the age of 50. And apparently it was a knee injury that really kind of forced him to retire. He maintained that he could have carried on longer.
I like how he probably wouldn't be allowed back into the Air Force at that age.
I know. Well, he appeared in nearly 800 competitive matches at club level, 701 in the Football League.
There wasn't as many games back then, either.
No, that's right. Yeah. 54 caps for England. And in 1965, they had a testimonial game in honour of Sir Stanley Matthews. 35,000 people were there. They witnessed a 10-goal thriller.
Did he play?
He must have played. and this is how much this man is revered throughout the world, the game of football. Lev Yashin, the great Russian goalkeeper, considered perhaps the best goalkeeper of all time. Ferenc Puskás and Alfredo Di Stefano.
Wow.
That's a lineup, that is.
Do you know what I mean? That is unbelievable stuff.
That's your Father, Son and Holy Ghost right there.
There it is. But yeah, I just. Extraordinary what this man achieved, and it's incredible really that we don't know so much about him, because he really is such a one of the great, probably maybe even the best player that England has ever produced, you know?
Didn't he really sort of argue, I know there's a little bit of sort of debate about this, but didn't he almost invent the sort of modern winger role as well?
Well, some people suggest that. I mean, I think it's tricky to say.
The formations were a bit different there, but would have called it sort of outside left or outside wide right or whatever. But
I think the right winger is the winger as we know it now. Some people suggest that he was the forerunner to that. But after his playing career, you know, when he retired, he went into management, first at Port Vale, and then moved to Malta to coach Hibernians, where he occasionally played. So goodness knows how old he is.
Like, he's not a young manager there.
He's not even a young manager.
The most amazing thing is that he went on to play so old, so effectively as well, and pace and jinkiness was all a part of his game. You know, but he apparently he was a teetotaler. He didn't smoke. He was a vegetarian, which was unheard of. Back then, you know, well, teetotalers are unheard of now in football. But yeah, he also coached a team of Bantu players in South Africa in the 70s. And I can only assume. And in 82, he went to live in Canada, where he continued to coach.
Because he featured in Nazzle. I'm pretty sure in the book I read about the New York Cosmos, it mentioned Stanley Matthews in Canada. So, yeah.
There you go.
Top scorer.
Even got himself into Nazzle.
Yeah.
Oh, that is just...
All roads lead to Nazzle.
That's it. Don't they just... He died in hospital in the year 2000, and after his death, more than 100,000 people lined the streets of Stoke-on-Trent to pay tribute to the great man. He was made the inaugural inductee of the English Hall of Fame, in a Football Hall of Fame, in 2002. And there's a statue of Matthews outside Stoke City's Britannia Stadium, and the dedication on it reads, "His name is symbolic of the beauty of the game, his fame timeless and international, his sportsmanship and modesty universally acclaimed, a magical player of the people, for the people. The International Federation of Football History and Statistics voted him the 11th greatest footballer of the 20th century."
Amazing.
And apparently the 1st of February has unofficially been named Sir Stanley Matthews Day, and one of the themes is to promote dress down days in the workplace. And you're encouraged to wear football shirts and all that kind of stuff.
So a I look long for... baggy track shorts.
Yeah, that's right. I look forward
not
to that.
Get booked.
That's right. I look forward to that next year. But just to end with a few quotes, Brian Clough said of the man, "I grew up in an era when he was God to those of us who aspired to play the game. He was a true gentleman, and we shall never see his like again." And he was a real gentleman. And Gianfranco Zola said, "He told me that he used to play for just £20 a week. Today he would be worth all the money in the Bank of England." But to end, I shall quote from the great man Pelé, who simply said, "Stanley Matthews, the man who taught us the way football should be played." Ladies and gentlemen, so Stanley Matthews, come on in. Gentlemen, Betway predictions. I got mine right. Pete, you got yours right.
I did, yeah.
Luke, you got yours
I
right.
I did. Genoa to beat Udinese at home.
I got mine off.
3-0.
James?
I got mine wrong. But who's the runaway leader?
Yeah. Still you at the moment. Yeah.
Probably.
I took a nice, safe, easy bet from Bobby Zamora.
Yeah, 90.
He got me 91st, was it? 91st?
Free kick.
In injury time. Well, who have we gone for this week? I've gone for Fulham away to Sunderland.
Oh, that's a touch and go one for me. I fancy Sunderland to turn their season around.
Well, you're wrong.
Fulham don't travel too well, do they? So,
they're like a cheap wine, eh? I've gone for Birmingham to beat Wigan at home, because Wigan are overall quite poor.
Petey, what have you got?
I'm going to go mental and go for Liverpool Blackburn draw.
Ooh.
So just because Torres may be hobbling back onto the pitch, but he's I just they're just a bit rubbish at the moment.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's not a bad shout, actually. Blackburn had a great win last week. So.
Yeah, they're okay.
It's betway.com/TheFootballRamble for all your betting needs.
That's it. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is podcast@TheFootballRamble.com, and the website is TheFootballRamble.com. Check out the blogs, and once again, may I recommend the Jim Lovetoy one. And remember, Ramblers, there's a little ramble extra for you on Friday afternoons if you go to 442.com. We do roughly about 15 minutes exclusive material for 442 every Friday, so get yourselves over there. 442.com.
We do roughly 15 minutes of rough material.
Yeah, that's about it. I think you're roughly right. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
This is Pete Donaldson.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.
We're all off for an MRI scan, you old gits. yeah, this week is the 10th anniversary of his desk.
His desk.
And the 14th anniversary of his first pencil sharpener.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.